I'm Afshin Ratazzi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from a Middle East where NATO proxy forces in concert with Israel and Al-Qaeda are trying to overthrow governments not only in Palestine but in Lebanon and now Syria. This as NATO finally tastes imminent defeat in its proxy war on Russia through Ukraine. All these issues and from the British-Israeli genocide in Gaza to NATO nation attempts to destroy everything from Venezuela to the Sahel and Southeast Asia are given the propaganda treatment in totalitarian so-called Western newspapers, TV, cinema and literature. But there are some who have exposed the lies. In The Racket, a rogue reporter versus the American Empire, co-founder of Declassified UK, Matt Kennard, delineates something of the systematic corrosion of humanity by imperial forces. No wonder it comes endorsed by long-term friends of Going Underground, John Pilger, Noam Chomsky and Julian Assange. Matt joins me now from London. Matt, thanks so much for coming on. And what a book The Racket is. It's been a week where even NATO propaganda media like Comcast, Sky News, Warner Brothers' CNN, let alone mouthpieces like your or our BBC, have found it difficult to explain to their audiences, I think, how it is that they support Al-Qaeda in Syria. How does your book, The Racket, give us a dimension in which to understand why the BBC and John Simpson, people around the world won't know who these people are. Actually, no one may know what CNN is, given by their viewing figures, but why the media is completely... They want to support those linked to the atrocities in 9/11.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? I think it goes to the heart of the message of the book, which is that the mainstream media is not what we're told. It's not what we learn in journalism school, that we are a check on power, that journalism deconstructs the lies of the state and corporations. When you get inside it, and I worked for the Financial Times, in fact, most of the reporting was done while I was at the Financial Times, you realize that actually the mainstream media is really an adjunct to state power often. They do some good stories of sort of scandals and that kind of thing. But in terms of systematic analysis and systematic deconstruction of the propaganda, you get none of it. And that's why it's such a beautiful system in a way, because it does allow some freedom within those confines of the mainstream media. But really, it protects power at all times. And just to go to your point about what's happening in Syria. So, of course, Al-Qaeda now, which is rebranded as HTS in Syria, it's useful to us now because we have been trying to overthrow the Assad government for over 10 years. So those people, as soon as they become useful to us, we rehabilitate them and propagandize for them. In fact, there was an article today in the Daily Telegraph which said something along the lines of how diversity-friendly jihadists are going to build a new Syria, that kind of line. Something that you... People,
diversity on behalf of those that have been historically chopping the heads off children.
Exactly. And imagine if you told someone that in October 2001 in America, that 23 years later, we're going to have mainstream media actually talking about Al-Qaeda as a good thing and about how they can bring a new Syria after a decade of war. It's preposterous, but it's not just Syria. It goes against everything. Every systematic mode of exploitation that is practiced by the West is justified, is legitimized by the mainstream media, and that's its purpose. There's whole heaps of ideology which we're fed from a very young age, which is effectively all lies. And we don't have a media which takes it apart. We have a media which regurgitates it. So we live swimming in propaganda and it needs to change. I do think it is changing now. I think it's actually different from even the time I was working at the Financial Times, which was 2009 to 2012. There was the mainstream media had more of a hold on the narrative than they do now because social media has allowed us to bypass the mainstream media. And that is why there's such attacks on social media, but also why this whole industry has sprouted up on about disinformation, which again is a adjunct to state power often. If you look at these organizations that are fighting so-called disinformation, they're often funded by the Foreign Office or the State Department. And they what they're about is to try and delegitimize new voices that work outside the mainstream and reveal new truths that you can't get into the mainstream. So it's there's always ways that power will work to protect itself in new circumstances.
Yeah, we have Elon Musk to thank for knowing the American warthog warplanes were used to protect al-Qaeda in effect this week, despite denials. Of course, Elon Musk, we might get into that later because he relates to Bolivia in your book. Lithium, quite important for his cars. You mentioned journalism just there. You went to the prestigious Columbia Journalism School, and in the book you say they were enthralled to the racket and its lies, and questioning things made you out as somehow anti-American. Just tell me about the Columbia Journalism School, which, you know, some people in the academy might know. The wider public have never heard of these places.
Yeah, so Columbia Journalism School is basically the most elite journalism school in the world. It creates and educates the sort of next generation of top corporate journalists in the States, but also worldwide. And I didn't really know that before I went there. And I actually went to Leeds University in the UK, so not an elite university, but I got a good story when I was there, which got me into Columbia, basically. But I was extremely disappointed by the culture and the level of journalism that was being taught and practiced there. Just one example is Henry Kissinger, who died recently, but is one of the most blood-soaked war criminals of the 20th century. He came to Columbia University when I was there, and I found that he came every year to kind of speak and pontificate about geopolitics and blah, blah, blah. And he was accepted as a sort of a kind of a warm, cuddly statesman. And I was in the room when he was speaking, and I put my hand up and I just said, how do you sleep at night? And the whole room just, like, I could hear an audible gasp, and then everything went silent. And he said, do you think you are morally superior to me? And that's an easy question to answer when it's Henry Kissinger asking you. So I said, yes. And he said, and then he there was a bit of back and forth. And he was like, all the stuff you've read is all lies, blah, blah, blah. But interestingly, after that, I was attacked massively by the faculty itself. One of the
They took Kissinger, the war criminal side.
Exactly. They thought that what I did was disgraceful. And one came up to me afterwards and said, you disgraced yourself the other day. I got basically zero support. But that is very telling about what Columbia University's role is. It's to whitewash and to support, essentially, American war criminals and make their actions seem part of what we're told is a liberal world order and rule of law and blah, blah, blah.
So, with honourable exceptions, Jeffrey Sachs. I know Victoria Nuland and Hillary Clinton are there at the moment, but...
No, Jeffrey Sachs is amazing, but he's not in the journalism school. I'm talking specifically about the journalism school. There's also other great academics throughout Columbia. And also there are a few in Columbia, but they're few and far between. And in some ways, they also add and generate the illusion that there is a free culture there that's critical of power, because it's kind of a fig leaf that they say, oh, well, we've got X professor. But on a general level, it's just it's what you would expect if you're talking about the most elite school in journalism in America. It's just producing the next ideologically trained propagandist for the American empire, essentially. The same happened when I went to the Financial Times. You realize, okay, well, I've learned all the things I need to learn to enter the mainstream media, but luckily I had other ideas.
That's the Japanese newspaper that told you go away and do your Save the World stuff when you left.
That was actually the editor of the FT. That was
Lionel Barber.
Yeah. He said, he's a nice enough guy, but he said, I wasn't an FT journalist. Go away and do your Save the World stuff, and maybe you can come back when you're a bit older.
But what an accolade. I mean, I should get to this week's events. Kissinger threatened me personally, I should say. Really? I'm proud to say. I mean, MI6, as far as we know, is actively supporting what's going on. And I don't know whether Elon Musk's Twitter, because we can see on social media the al-Qaeda advance, whether that's shamed Butcher Blinken State Department to say, look, we're not doing this. And Jake Sullivan, despite having previously said al-Qaeda's on our side in Syria, they're kind of distancing themselves, but at the same time, having to do it underhand. Is that because it must be a hard sell even to those journalists' news desks to say
Yeah.
We're on the side of Al-Qaeda and ISIS.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And obviously, they want to do it underhand. And in fact, there's been quite a lot of, I think, stories that have come out in Israel saying Israel prefers to have Assad in place rather than the unknown of Al-Qaeda or at some Islamist government, which I think is just propaganda put out by the Israelis to try and muddy the waters, when it's very, very clear that Israel, the United States, allies have been trying to break the axis of resistance for over a decade. And Syria is a key part of the supply line from Iran to Hezbollah. And also all this happened soon after that ceasefire deal was launched. So I think all these things are connected. And what they want to do is overthrow the Assad regime, and they don't care who they use. That's the point. So they want to do it covertly because of for publicity reasons, like you say. But even then, they don't care too much. Like I said, that article in the Daily Telegraph, and you're going to see more and more of that. People have short memories, and people are very, very susceptible to propaganda. Look at HTS's rebrand. From they were previously Al Qaeda. They started wearing suits. They said, "Oh, we're all about diversity. We're woke Al Qaeda now." But people buy it.
Yeah, enough, HTS this week got angry about a shot of a Christmas tree being taken down because, of course, they want to kill the Christians historically. I mean, I don't think they get over there though that the UAE president phoned Assad on the day to give support. The Saudi Arabia are friends with Iran, that this region has changed. What do you think about organizations that have been pro-Palestine, looking at the genocide? You can see the Qatari news channel Al Jazeera, where I was the first ever English language employee. Interesting how they're embedded, it seems, with Al-Qaeda.
Well, Qatar was allegedly one of the main funder of Al-Nusra as well, which is the precursor to HTS. That came out during the time. And Qatar has got quite a ugly record of supporting extremists across the region, particularly in the Syrian civil war. I actually don't know about the position of the UAE and the Saudis as well. I think that essentially they'd want to break Iran.
Certainly not their position. And of course, we are here. Of course, historically. In fact, that's really what I'm coming to about the. I presume they haven't just read your book and realized that history has changed. But I mean, as you delineate the IMF and World Bank's destructive policies, people increasingly are not going to want these loans, are they, these countries? I mean, you can see Mali and Senegal, and you can see what's happening in Southeast Asia. I mean, I'm not saying it's just your book, clearly, but the world has changed, hasn't it? I mean, obviously, Ukraine has made that change after the sanctions on Russia and the sanctions on China. Do you see it as changing now?
Yeah, there's been a massive shift to the east, essentially, and it's mainly around China, to be honest with you, because even Russia is not, in terms of its economy, on the same scale as China. So China's rise, and they're saying in my 10, 15 years, it could be the biggest economy in the world. And regardless of what you think about the Chinese government, the space that opens up for independent governments in Africa, Latin America, Asia to operate is huge, because after the end of the Cold War, there was only one game in town, which was the US, you know, and there was a pretty bleak time for the left and independent movements. You had the Zapatistas in 1994 in Mexico, and then it changed a bit when Chavez came in 1999 in Venezuela. But essentially, if you were trying to escape these institutions like the IMF and World Bank, which are effectively arms of the United States, there wasn't any other pole to organize around. And that's changed now. And you see the BRICS bank and all sorts of innovative things that are happening there.
Matt Kennard, I'll stop you there. More from the author of The Racket, A Rogue Reporter Versus the American Empire, and co-founder of Declassified UK after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the author of The Racket, A Rogue Reporter Versus the American Empire, and co-founder of Declassified UK, Matt Kennard. Matt, in part one, you were talking about this new world order, as it were, as regards new ways to have economies in the global south. But this is happening at the same time the rise of China, which is already the biggest economy by a PPP, as the genocide is happening. Now, you're in London. I mean, how hard is it for them to comprehend, these journalists, let alone the British public, what their government is doing? And you might have to remind us, what exactly is the British role in the genocide? You've been, I know, tweeting and writing about the intimate relationship between the Sir Keir Starmer government and genocide, making him a war criminal.
Yeah, well, essentially, I think that's the top line, that we are not just complicit in the genocide in Gaza, we're participants and have been from the start, actually. But in terms of what impact that's had on the public don't know, because it goes back to your original question about the media. The media has left out all the information that people would need to understand our role. In fact, at Declassified, we've done pretty much all the work on the UK military and intelligence role, which is extreme. I always say that this is a tripartite genocide. This is UK, US and Israel. US is providing most of the arms, UK is providing most of the intelligence, and Israel's getting it done. And in terms of how that works on the ground, there's one story came out in the New York Times in the summer that the UK intelligence services had deployed a spy team inside Israel to help Israel with its operation in Gaza. So that came out in the New York Times. It was leaked by an Israeli official. And the Israeli official said that the UK spies were giving, quote, value added to Israeli operations. And they were, quote, providing intelligence we can't collect on our own. So this is huge in the context of the fact that there's ICC arrest warrants out for the Prime Minister and the former Defence Minister, the fact that there's a genocide case at the ICJ, the world's highest court, ongoing. And Israeli officials are leaking that the British have been providing stuff that they can't collect on their own. You would think that might interest the media. That story has never been mentioned in the UK media. The other side of it that's never talked about is that we are, the UK is sending a spy flight over Gaza every day, pretty much, and sometimes two a day. Now, they're in the sky for 6 hours. And that intelligence is then being passed to the Israelis. Now, the UK say, well, it's just for hostage rescue, but we've only got one hostage in Gaza. And we had two when the flight started. One of them was killed, it looks like, by the Israelis themselves. So what is that information? Where is it going? And what does it involve? Because my hunch is that it probably is being used for operations by Israel, because I think it's semantic wordplay. Because if you say it's only to do with hostage rescue, well, the Israelis present their whole offensive in Gaza as hostage rescue operations. So it gives them leeway to do whatever they want. Again, there was a question in Parliament actually asked by a Liberal Democrat peer recently where he said, he asked the Ministry of Defence, can you tell me that the information we're providing to Israel is not being used for military targeting? And they refused to answer. So there's your answer. I think that's highly suspicious. The other side of it is the special forces. Now, special forces, for people who don't know, are a highly secretive arm of the UK state. In fact, they're even more secretive than the intelligence agencies. You can get basically zero information about what they're up to. They've been fighting 7 covert wars around the world, the UK Special Forces, commonly known as the SAS. But on October 27th last year, so soon after the start of the genocide, the Sun newspaper, they were leaked that the SAS had deployed to our base on Cyprus for Gaza operations. And then the following day to that, October 28th, the UK military sent out a denotice to every media editor saying, don't publish any information about what the SAS is up to in Israel and Gaza. And since that day, we've not had any information about what the special forces are doing, which is, again, in the context of what I talked about, these legal processes ongoing, we could be directly involved on the ground in Gaza. I don't know.
Well, it's not preposterous. Going underground used to ignore the denotices when we were in Britain. Maybe that's why we're in Dubai. But Karim Khan has been on this show, Chief Prosecutor of the International Caucasian Court, International Criminal Court, and he's certainly not looking into your allegations. People can follow you on X, of course, because you reproduced the maps showing the flights where Britain... I mean, this is hundreds of thousands, mostly women and children, murdered with the aid of the Royal Air Force.
Yeah, they're disgracing the name of the RAF, but it does, but people are surprised, I have to say, when they are made aware of what is going on, it completely upends their whole worldview, because we're seeing on our phones some of the worst stuff we've ever seen in our life, maybe the worst stuff, you know, mass starvation campaigns, bombing of civilians, relentless every day, kids and more mutilated kids than in all modern conflicts, kids with no legs, their legs blown off, arms blown off. It's horrendous. And then you know that we're not only just giving them diplomatic support and sending them arms, we're supplying intelligence for them to get this operation done. And people are shocked by that, which I think is why the mainstream media is so bad at covering it, because again, they protect power. And whenever our role is mentioned, it's always mentioned in a kind of benign, basically taking the official line. And the official line is, we have nothing to do with what's going on the ground. We only are helping the Israelis to rescue our hostage, which is rubbish, I think. So, it's horrendous.
Do you think the environment is, I mean, and people are watching these mouthpiece media like BBC less and less. What's it like in Britain then? I mean, MI6 is there, who are friends with Sir Keir Starmer, who persecuted Julian Assange. We've both interviewed Jeremy Corbyn. In the new environment where people aren't any more persuaded by the propaganda media system there, could they do what they did to Jeremy Corbyn, the most popular, socialist kind of leader, opposition leader in the whole of Western Europe, by these fake anti-Semitism slurs? Could they ever do it again? Or are they there, those deep state actors? And that is your understanding. It was the deep state that, you know, people can look online to see the British soldiers using pictures of Corbyn as target practice in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to what I said about the media and the free press and the illusion around that, it's the same with democracy. We don't have a democracy in this country. We have an oligarchy. And that stopped working when Jeremy Corbyn was elected in 2015. And as you said, the Labour Party swelled to the biggest party in Western Europe. And he was destroyed by a campaign around anti-Semitism. But also there was many, many elements of the British state that that wanted him destroyed. Arms companies, the UK military, intelligence agencies, the Israel lobby, they all got together. And actually the reason that the anti-Semitism campaign became the kind of central campaign was that it worked much better than the other ones. The left were very bad at defending themselves. Corbyn himself was bad at defending himself.
He was a traitor, arguably. But then, okay, more important than Corbyn, what about you? Because you are covering these stories about the so-called deep state, some will call it the state, of a genocidal country like Britain. How safe are you? We know reports of Kit Clarenberg, the great journalist for The Grey Zone, being stopped at Heathrow Airport. Sarah Wilkinson, the pro-Palestinian peace activist and journalist, I understand, has been visited by police. Richard Medhurst. I mean, do you feel safe that MI5 won't knock on your door and Special Branch won't knock on your door anytime soon as you show the flights of British warplanes aiding the genocide in Gaza?
Well, I don't think anyone's safe that's speaking out in the UK now, because it's not just the journalists you mentioned. Just recently, Asa Winstanley, who's a very good reporter for Electronic Intifada, he had his house raided by the police at dawn, and they seized all his devices. But what was quite scary about what happened to him was he wasn't even charged or arrested. So apparently in the UK, under terrorism laws, they can come in, the police, and take all your devices without even charging you with the crime, which is outrageous. And then you had Sarah Wilkinson, as you mentioned, and Richard Medhurst. They're basically clamping down on democracy because they've lost control of the narrative. As you mentioned, the power of social media, independent media, has grown massively and is helped to move the conversation away from the state narrative. Now, in the context of when you lose control of the narrative through your traditional media assets and you lose control of the population, i.e. a majority want an arms embargo and a ceasefire, then the only thing you have left is to discipline the population with the law. And I think we're going to see increasing amounts of repression. And it has actually picked up massively under Keir Starmer. The journalists I mentioned, they were all arrested or detained or raided under Keir Starmer. So I think we're going to see that escalate. In terms of me personally, I think that I'm no different to the rest of the independent media space, where we all expect or know that there are risks that come that are new, that are unprecedented. And the other thing is, we're not the public sphere in the UK is undefended. So all the journalists I mentioned, Sarah Wilkinson, Richard Medhurst, Asa Winstanley, Natalie Strecker recently, all got raided arrested, charged, and not a single word has ever appeared about it in the mainstream media. So it's just a part of the news that is just completely erased from mass media.
I mean,
more scary. I think for me that was more scary than the raids themselves.
Yeah, that's silence. To give Starmer some sympathy, I mean, I was on BBC Question Time with him a while back. I don't have much sympathy. People can look up how his Crown Prosecution Service tried to pin fake rape claims on Julian Assange. You write about this, 10,000 perhaps US soldiers in Britain. I mean, the hostages here, the British government, is Britain, like South Korea, actually, which has been in the news this week, under military occupation? I mean, I know they're talking about drones hitting RAF Lakenheath and RAF Mildenhall from the drones, which so lethal during the so-called war on terror. Is it? Do you feel like that?
Yeah, we are. And again, it's completely silenced by the mainstream media, but I did a lot of work about the UK military presence in the UK, and it's over 12,000 US troops permanently stationed in the UK across 11 so-called RAF sites. They're called RAF, but they're leased to the Americans and operate effectively as US bases. And they fly all sorts of missions, often illegal ones, where war crimes are carried out. They were involved in operations in Libya, Iraq, other places. And we're not allowed to know anything that happens on them. That's the outrageous thing. Well, apart from the occupation itself, but that's hugely outrageous. You can get some information about RAF sites, what UK activity is. But if you ask through transparency mechanisms about the US military presence, you're just told we don't comment on allies' movements or activities in our country, which is a huge black hole in British democracy. And then the other side of that is, and also is another massive black hole, is the US intelligence role. Because we know that there's a massive CIA site at RAF Croughton, which was the base where outside of which Harry Dunn was killed by CIA officer Ansar Coulis, who was then spirited out of the country. We know that GCHQ Bude, GCHQ is the UK's largest intelligence agency. It has a huge station in Cornwall called GCHQ Bude. Snowden's leak showed that 50% of the funding for GCHQ Bude comes from the National Security Agency in the United States. So they're basically running the station. And that's how it works. The US just, we are a vassal state and we do what we're told. And we're not allowed, and our government does not allow us to know anything about that US activity. And obviously, transparency should be much higher for foreign militaries and foreign intelligence agencies in our country. We should be able to know more about them than our own. But it's the opposite.
Matt Kennard, thank you. That's it for the show. Matt's book, The Racket, A Rogue Reporter Versus the American Empire, is out now. Our continued condolences to those surviving the UK-US-EU armed genocide here in this region. We'll be back on Monday for more on the scale of that genocide, which could be as high as 25% of Gaza killed. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country. And head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.